then a What up, what up, what up? Welcome to another episode of New Orleans That Basketball and New Orleans That Network podcast. As always, I am your host, Raphael Rattler, joined by my fellow middle brother, Gary G. Money Rattlers. Pop, what you, bro?
What up, bro? Good to see you again, man. Good to be back on the pod. First of all, it's the first podcast we've had since International Women's Day. So shout out to all the women. Happy International Women's Day. I hope somebody made your day special and showed you that you are certainly appreciated. We come from a family full of strong women, and we love the women in our lives. Rest in peace to my mom. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we're celebrating all the women around the world, all of our women supporters, all of the women in our fellas supporters' lives. Shout out to all of you guys. With that being said, man, the NCAA Women's Championship, the championships, the conference championships are having, the tournaments. Bro, let me tell you something. If you're not watching women's basketball right now, for whatever reason, you're not watching it, you are missing out on some high quality hoops. Caitlin Clark went clean off the day in the second half. She struggled in the first half, went clean off in the second half to win her third three-peat Big Ten championship. LSU and South Carolina, they got down and dirty. And they had some fisticuffs going, but it was a really great game. Apparently, Flo J's brother jumped out of the stands, was ready to fight fisticuffs and do those things. And then Juju Watkins, man, like the freshman from USC, she is cooking out here. And I think she scored like the third most points in like freshman basketball history. So, listen, with March Madness right around the corner, I mean, listen, support all of collegiate athletes, all collegiate sports, but the women's basketball game is blowing up. There are some absolute superstars in women college basketball. So please support them. Please watch them. I'm off my soapbox, bro. How's everything on your end?
Everything is blessed, man. I'm raising two of those myself in my house, so I absolutely agree. Shout out to the Aces. First ever season tickets sold out.
Yes, sir.
Starting next season, I think it's only going to grow, because you're absolutely right. Right now, the college women's game is just so much better than men's.
Before we
jump into that, because the madness has been madnessing as of late. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter, on X, on IG, on TikTok. That's No Basketball, No E. Make sure you're liking the episode below, and make sure you subscribe to the channel, because this is that time of year where hoopheads get to enjoy themselves, because you get nothing but hoops with no interruptions moving forward. So let's talk about it. So this week, the Pelicans just wrapped up their third and final game on their road trip, going 3-0 this road trip, but starting it off this week in a win in Philly that on the surface you look at it, it's like a win is a win, but like during the game it kind of got ugly. So let's talk about it. Obviously Embiid has not returned. Tyrese Maxey is in concussion protocol, even though somehow he came back in the game versus Dallas and finished the game, but somehow missed game. Anyway, I guess the concussion happened after the game. No Robert Covington, no Shake Melton. So, like, you go into this one. Again, we talked about it. There's a lot of wounded ducks right now. And, again, you know, to the Pelicans' credit, it's crazy that you see that injury report and there's nobody on. Now, shout out to Dyson Daniels kind of fighting his way back, trying to make a push to get back into rotation before the playoffs start. But, like, every other team is dealing with something, and a lot of times it's to their stars. And so maybe the fact that the Pelican stars haven't been exerting too much energy past the – I don't know. But – in this particular game, again, it's hard to get up for the games where you look at the other side, you're like, a lot of those guys are not NBA rotation. It's hard to get up for that. And so the Pels come out, they punch Philly in the mouth. You've seen the point Zion be the thing that's kind of pushed the Pelicans starting unit to look a little bit better and to come out a little bit stronger, because right off jump, you got to deal with Zion, and then you got to figure out what bad decision you're going to make from there. So the Pelicans jump out to a 29-point lead at halftime. And then in typical Pelicans fashion, the second half, they sleepwalk, the leads cut down, there's a ton of turnovers. There's a lot of, like, what is this type offense that you saw from the Pelicans. But ultimately, they were able to kind of wide the tide. I tweeted my post-game, you know, reactions was, at least it's baby step. At least they won the game. Now, they blew a lead they had no business blowing, but at least they won this time, which is a sign that at least they're heading the right direction. But what did you take away from this Philly game where, again, the Pels get a win that they need, probably just as bad as Philly did?
Oh, man. A tale as old as time. Pelicans up, Pelicans down. It is a tale as old as time. But the first thing I'm going to say is, hey, they won a close game underneath 10. Hey, a win is a win. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You want a clutch win, a win that you got to win tight. Now, you didn't say that they couldn't be up 30 first. You didn't say that. You said you wanted a win in clutch time. Under 10 points, they won a game. Hey, a win is a win. But listen, this is the Pelicans are they're hitting a part of their schedule where they're playing teams like you said. A lot of teams are hurt. A lot of teams are injured. They are facing a lot of opponents right now. One of the opponents is the team that is standing across from you in the jerseys, right? The opponent that they're facing on those nights are complacency. They are fighting complacency. They're also playing those teams right below them in the standings, and they're playing those teams right above them in the standings, right? So every game is high up. High maintenance. Everything is so tightly wounded. And then lastly, like you're fighting human nature. Like you said, you get on this court and you go into these games, and I don't care how much of a professional you want players to be, or how much of a, you know, you're a professional NBA player, or NFL player. Like you need to be locked in at all times. They're just like you in the hoop sessions at the rec, right? You get on the court, you playing with your boys, y'all been rolling, and then here come that team. Where they got your boy who don't really know how to play basketball and all of them rolling in, and you're like, okay, we're just gonna beat them and go. And then they get up on you like 7-3. You're like, all right, let's lock in. The Pelicans tend to get away from a lot of the things that make them great when they get up and they get bored. And you saw it in this Philly game. But all in all, again, this is an opportunity to learn. You saw it kind of rear its ugly head. We'll get into today's game a little bit today. But this is you rather have these wins on the you know, the record. Damn how they get it. And my post-game reaction was get on a plane and get the hell up out of Philly. And that's and that is the best way you could put that game.
All right. So there was a couple of things that stood out to me. Obviously, Najee Marshall has a season high and goes 4-for-4 from three. And you saw a little bit of that carry over to this game. Something that was really interesting to me is that CJ McCollum struggled mightily. And there was a point at the end of the game where the game got real tight and real close. And CJ had like some bad possessions and back-to-back possessions in a row. And Withergreen pulled him. And again, we've been talking about they are going to have to be tough. The benefit and the downfall of having a deep roster is knowing when to play those players. Well, if someone doesn't have it going, even if it's your leader, even if it's your guy, even if it's the old eldersman of the team, sometimes it's the best choice to pull him, and that's what you saw from Withergreen. The other thing that stood out was, man, that I think was the best defensive performance I've ever seen from Zion in an NBA jersey. Like, he was impacting the game, and it's not just the steals and the blocks. Like, it was his mentality that, like, I am a good defender, a great defender. You should fear me. You disrespectful when you just throw the ball at the goal and you don't think I'm behind you. That's the type of tweet you and I have talked about, and I go back to his Drewski interview years ago with Mountain Dew. Thank God that's no longer. That connection is no longer there. But Zion said, not only do I want to be MVP, but I want to be defensive player of the year. I've said it the entire time. Zion has every tool that you need to be good on defense. You're strong, you're quick, you have instincts, you're agile, you're able to move your feet, you're able to jump. He can do all of those things, right? It just happens to be how much energy you have left after you are getting fouled, going to the basket over and over and over again to desert on the other side. Well, now start your steam that conditioning look up. Now he's starting to look like the Duke player that everybody has been clamoring for since day one, right? Now you're starting to see him impact the game on both sides. So let's fast forward a little bit to tonight's game, where again the Pelicans handle business. No Trae Young, no Jalen Johnson, no Okongwu. So again, a beaten team. They came off three straight wins of their own and two of them against decent opponents. They beat the Cavs, they beat the Wizards, stuff like that. But they have been playing a little bit better, galvanized since Trae Young's, if you will. But again, the Pelicans came out, felt out the game, turned it on, got a lead, and just kind of held it there. So tell me what you saw from this game. Tell me what you saw from Zion. And again, carrying over that defensive activity from game to game, because if you're going to make plays in the playoffs, your wings have to be both ways and two-way forwards.
Yeah, there's a couple of things from this game that I'd like to talk about. I think the first thing that we'll talk, since we're talking about Zion, Zion is going to start to get some of the reputation misses that I was talking about way back, like last year, when we were talking about his defensive impact. It's 'cause some of the corners he was turning last season, you saw some of the things, kind of coming. Now, like he got a couple, like a chase down block. He's got like two in the Philly game. People are going to start checking that rearview mirror. And when you got guys like Herb and like when Dyson gets back and Zion flying around and holds, like you start checking around for those things. And we always talk about how basketball is played in windows. You get a guy to get off of his rhythm for a half split second because he has to look if Zion is flying behind him. Then like that all, it only increases your sixth best defensive rating defense in the league. And so when Zion is out there doing those things and Brandon Ingram is following in his footsteps defensively, he's getting into passing lanes and being tall and things like that. Like this team is built on defense, but it's more when you think about the team, what it's built on like around Herb's great perimeter defense. But if you start to have like Herb's great perimeter defense and like Zion is offering weak side shot blocking and Brandon Ingram is offering weak side shot block, like those are the things that takes this team to another level. So Zion's defensive energy has been noticeable, and you can start it. Those things that you want him to do, they start to pay off in the standings and in wins. And to piggyback off that, like Zion's offensive game, now that he has the ball in his hands from the first play of the game today, Zion got the ball and went straight down the lane. There was no like, let's set this up, let's set that up. It was Zion down the lane to the rim. And when you get Zion, I mentioned this in a couple of episodes ago, when you put the ball in Zion's hands, he feels engaged. I talked about revving that big motor up, right? Getting that motor going and having to stop because you're waiting for the ball or whatever the case is. When you're a guy that's like constantly in the game and you have the ball in your hands, and you're making plays and you're passing and things like that, those are the things that keep you engaged in the game. And you see it on both sides of the floor. He is so locked in right now. And it looks as though he's starting to hit another gear. We talked about, the gears that he could hit because his team hit another gear. We always talked about Zion had another level to get to. And you're starting to see it now. Even when he's not getting those 30-point games, you're like, damn, Zion's fingerprints are all over this game. And then there are games where he does have it. And that's what makes, again, I talk about the uniqueness of the Pelicans. The Pelicans have one of those, like, Detroit Pistons teams where, like, everybody contributes, and those old championship teams where everybody contributes. But the problem is those Pistons teams had, like, Chauncey Billups to rely on and, like, Richard Hamilton. The Pelicans have, like, Zion and Brandon Ingram, guys who are 25 points per game at any point in time. So this when Zion is clicking on offense and defense like this, this team is scary. The other thing I want to talk about, Raphael. let's talk about Trey Murphy, bro. Let's talk about Trey Murphy. He is back. And I don't mean back as in like, okay, like this is something that, you know, he could come in and do. Like Trey Murphy is playing with the confidence of a like four-time All-Star. Like he is like, I'm here. Like I belong as part of as mentioned, as a cog in a great offense. And he has returned fully to Trey Murphy, the conundrum. I mean, he is scoring on all three levels. He is, you run him off the 3-point line because he's a 40% 3-point shooter, but he was also in the slam dunk contest and he's dunking on people over and over again. And I think the thing that impresses me most about Trey Murphy, and it kind of relates to Zion as well, when you look at Zion's defense, you're like, okay, are these little sparks that you're seeing? Or are you building a consistency of, like, is this part of the game now? Trey Murphy is hitting the boards, bro. He is rebounding. And I think you always talked about he should be a better rebounding than he is. I think this is now part of his game, rebounding. And why that's so important is because Trey can get the ball up and off the rebound and take the ball up. And now you don't have to worry about getting the ball to a guy who's from the logo. And we've seen his pull up off the dribble from, you know, deep 3-point game. And now that he's hitting the boards and bringing the ball up and doing some of those things and unlocking that offense, imagine a shift of the defense, how the way Trey Murphy shifts the defense, but like now he's bringing the ball up. So like you're already at a mismatch advantage because you're cross matching and now the defense has to shift. It has so much opportunity for one-on-ones on the other side, for weak side actions on the other side. Like Trey is really in his bag and he is doing things for the Pelicans that are just completely unlocking the offense. And it's gotten to a point, I don't know if you saw this, there were like four or five possessions where the Hawks were like, to hell with Brandon Ingram, we need to guard this guy. Mm-hmm. And so like, now you're leaving Brandon Ingram open and he's making plays. He missed that wide open three, but he's able to make plays. And God knows what happens if this starts to be something where, okay, teams have to really start game planning for for Trey Murphy, and B.I. gets more open shots and one-on-one opportunities, you know, throughout the rest of the season and into the playoffs. So I just think that Trey Murphy is him being back, man. This unlocks the team in a way that I don't even think people thought could happen, because you saw Trey going through his struggles and you just figure, okay, it's going to take him a season to get his feet underneath him. And next season, he'll have that injury behind him. He'll go through training camp. He'll come back. No, Trey Murphy is back right now, and it is paying dividends for the team right now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's not just Trey when it comes to rebounding, right? Like, I think something has – you know, Zion talks about like Herb is the word and stuff like that. But I think there has been like a transition or a click in the wings for this team. Like Zion's on the boards now and B.I.'s on the boards now and Trey's on the board now. We always talk about like this team's nickname is Wingstop for a reason, because their best players are all 6'6" to 6'10", somewhere in there. And to your point, it's not just if Trey gets the rebound and pushes the ball. It's if Zion gets the rebound and pushes the ball. If B.I. gets the rebound, pushes the ball. Najee gets the rebound, pushes the ball. Herb gets the rebound. You have 6'8", somebody coming downhill on your 6'3", 6'4" guard who's just a shooter, whatever it is, at all times. And so you notice that the thing that I noticed the most in this game is, and they talked about it before, in the second half of the Philly game, they just kind of started walking the ball up and they just kind of let the game kind of sink away as Philly started getting momentum and making a push, because every home team is going to make some type of push. Well, in this game versus Atlanta, every time they got close, you saw pace come. And like, if you see Zion get the rebound and start going, you are already in your Deion Sanders backpedal, because if not, it's 2 points every single time. And so if you have multiple guys that can do that at any particular time, that just makes it so difficult for all these other teams. People talk about the Clippers and what they can do in terms of what they can bring at you from a wing standpoint. Same thing with the Celtics. What the Pelicans are in that group too, in terms of, we just have more athletes than you do, and we're going to find the mismatch to say you can't guard one of them, and then all of a sudden, everybody shuffling, all of a sudden, Trey Murphy is open for another three. Like that. That is the conundrum that the Pelicans are putting teams in right now, and I'm glad they're finally starting to capitalize on it. Now, it's funny that you said Trey Murphy and his ascension and what he's been able to do, and we'll talk about that. I thought you were going a different direction with that. I thought you were about to say, did you see Herb Jones?
Let me tell you something.
DeJounte Murray this game.
I am uncomfortable with what Herb Jones did to DeJounte Murray. I didn't want to talk about it because it gives me secondhand uncomfortable. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, like, don't do that. I bet you if you gave DeJounte Murray some truth serum, he would say, I would have loved to play for the Pelicans, not only because they're a good team, but because I don't want to have to deal with Herb Jones ever again in my life. Herb Jones has been bullying DeJounte Murray since the play-in tournament when he was with the Spurs. That he does not like seeing number five for the Pelicans walk on the floor.
Not even a little bit. And, like, it was the way – like, we talk about body language on this pod. Like, from the jump, like, you could see it on DeJounte's face, like, God damn, this guy again. Like, every time he'd get off a screen, they weren't switching the screen. A couple games ago, Herb was like, I want this matchup versus Tyrese, held him to 0 points. Then this game, you saw it in the first half, they weren't switching. Herb was fighting off the screen, and he just looked so dejected every possession. There was one where Herb got a steal, like they ran into each other, and you just saw him just put his head down. And I'm like, man, this guy is stepping up to a different level defensively that I didn't know was possible. Like, he was already a good defender.
He was pissing DeJounte off. DeJounte, there was a couple of times DeJounte, like, got the ball and, like, threw it at him, like, after he got a score, because yeah. He just was like, man, I'm tired of it. And, like, you could see Herb kind of, like, shaking his head every time he got, like, a deflection or a
touch. Oh, he was talking. Like, nope, Herb was
not
vocal.
Today. Not today. That's what Herb might be. Herb might be one of the best shit talkers on the team. Like, it's one of those, like, it's me and you. I'm not getting everybody else involved. I'm talking to you. It's great.
I think
it's
he
great.
Is.
I love watching Herb play defense.
When you have the ability to lock people up like that, that gives you the ability to talk back because there's nothing they could do about it on the other end. And again, I just go back to last part. I'm like, man, if you got that and then somehow Dyson Daniels gets healthy and you sub out Herb and it's like, damn, this guy's out here next? That is something that other teams don't have. And so it poses a question. We just talked about what Zion's been able to do in terms of flipping that switch defensively and showing the things that everybody was so excited that Zion had in his bag outside of the offensive side of the ball. We just talked about what Trey Murphy's been able to do. His past couple years, we looked at the stats, like, leading up until March, they were kind of the same. So even though Trey was struggling, it was March and April of last year when he was just third behind Steph and Klay in three-pointers made. And since March has started, it's only been four games, he's averaging 24 points on 55% from three. I don't know, 5 rebounds and a steal per game. So he's affecting the game at multiple levels, like you said, a three-level scorer, but also on the defensive end, also on the boards, showing the fact that he's a mismatch as well. So you talk about that. There's another thing that I want to pay a little bit more attention to because I've seen the trend the last couple games outside of Herb just locking everybody up. I think B.I. is starting to get it. I think the mentality of B.I. Now, tonight, he doesn't have that many points, but you look at 10-7-7, like, he was setting up and facilitating. He had an impact on the game without scoring a bunch of points. The Pelicans won by double figures. But I think his mentality is starting to get there. That, hey, when it's just me on the court, like, I need to play like that guy, and I need to both get my own, but also set other people up the same way Zion just did before he sat down. And then when they're all on the court together, you see him not being reluctant to take the catch and shoot three. He's letting them fly now. Like, it's catch and shoot. It's not, let me think about it, dribble it 8 more times. It's, I got to let these go because these are the shots that is going to get me to my 20 points. And if you have all of those things connected, growing at the same time, are the Pelicans peaking at the right time? Because we talked about it about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. So far in the season, you've seen incredible basketball from everybody in the West and everybody's best player, Jokic, Shea, Luka, you name it, except for the Pelicans. And now you're starting to see all the pieces connect and the puzzle coming together for the Pelicans. And now it's like, and some of those other teams are starting to fracture off and lose games and go on losing streaks. Do you think that if things are starting to click and that the Pelicans have figured something out that, again, they're about to go play their fifth game, which have been elusive for the Pelicans. They haven't been able to win 5 in a row. They've had 4 shots at it, haven't been able to win 5 in a row. And you're playing against one of the best teams in the league in Cleveland this week. Can you get over that hump, which is crazy, 5-game win streak? Can you get over that hump? Do you think this time's a little bit different?
It feels different. Now, caveat, they have not played the best teams.
No, they have not.
They have not played the best teams. But the game that they're playing is transferable. Like it should be able to stand the test of a good team coming through in Cleveland. And so it's funny. First of all, it feels really icky talking about the Pelicans playing so well at this, because it's just like you're watching everybody around and it's like, oh, like Steph is out and LeBron is out and Book is out and the Kings are dealing with some things and the Mavs are dealing with some things. Cat and it's like out. Cat is out. Like you're looking around and it reminds me of like when with the last episode of Will's of Fresh Prince, where like you're looking around and it's like, wait, so we're the healthy team? Like we're the team with players available, right? Like that's what the Pelicans are feeling. And it just feels icky because it's like, you just know you
wait for the shoe to drop.
It's like, and it's the jadedness of being being in New Orleans and being, you know, covering the Pelicans and things. And so it feels icky, but at the same time, it does feel like some things are clicking. It feels like it's crazy what time on task will do. The Pelicans get more than like 10 games straight of players playing together, the starting five being available, the big three being available.
Extra time to practice, not on a road trip.
And it looks like they look like a totally different team than those games when they did not play, have those guys around and things like that. And so it's funny how that works. And so I do think roles are being defined. I think it took a while for Willie Green. Like we talk about like the players on the floor. Willie Green is a coach, and he still has some faults that they will rear their ugly head. But what coach is perfect? No coach is perfect. But it took him some time to figure out, you know, who his team was and the best identity for his team. And it took him a while to just get everybody available, right? Like Trey's been in and out and Zion's been in and out. And now this team is starting to figure out, we need to play this way. Here are our non-negotiables. Herb, this is your job. One aspect you could tell this team is starting to lock in and gel. Do you remember what used to happen when teams went zone on the Pelicans? They looked like they had never seen a basketball court a day in their lives. They were like, what is this? You know, it's like the meme with the guy with the butterfly. Is this an NBA?
Or the press. Like, the press too. Yeah, the zone and the press.
Yeah, yep. The press. And it used to be mind-boggling that game after game, teams would go in the zone and press, and it would be not and it would knock the team, knock the Pelicans off of kilter. Now, like the Pelicans went into like the Hawks went into a zone, and like Zion went to the exact perfect place, and he did the exact perfect play over and over again, to the point where the Hawks they went into a zone because they couldn't guard Zion, and then they had to get out of the zone because they couldn't guard Zion, because the team knew exactly where to go. It was a perfect, like. And that's just an encapsulation, a small thing that like you would think that like a professional basketball team would know, but it takes guys time to understand each other and understand, okay, Zion needs to be there and not Brandon Ingram, or, you know, Herb needs to be in this corner now, and, you know, and things like that. And also these guys are just all getting better, right? You play the way you get better at basketball is to play basketball. And these guys have been healthy all season. These guys have been available all season. And so Herb is now a knockdown shooter. Like, he's part of the Shot Boys. That would have – last year you would have never been able to tell the Pelicans or Willie Green that, right? Trey Murphy is now ascended to, like, he is on your game plan. Zion has now become, you know, more available and has become a better player. Brandon Ingram has become a better leader, a better all-around player. So, like, these guys are getting better, and they're getting time on task together. CJ has leaned 90% into catch and shoot threes. And so, like, these guys have all gotten better. The roles have been defined, and it's all coalescing at the same time. It's not about you know, who peaks at what time. You know, it's about, can you be healthy, and when do you start playing your best basketball, right? And when you peak, not if you peak, but when you peak. Because we've seen teams, Indiana look like a runaway team going away in the first half of the season. You know, the Knicks look like a runaway team going out in the first half of the season. But it's now the Pelicans look like a team that's like that feels like a higher seed than they are. And it's because of some of the early season losses and things. So, you know, they are coalescing at the perfect time. And I think if they could continue to stay healthy, you know, this is the crunch time, right? Like, you can see the playoff line. You see these guys like Cat going down right now is awful, right? Like you see right at the finish line, you start to get these injuries and guys needed surgery, Donovan Mitchell and things. And just stay healthy, continue to play this brand of basketball. And when it's time to get into the playoffs, the Pelicans should be one of the hottest teams in the NBA.
Right. You look at right now, they have the longest active win streak in the NBA with four, which is crazy because everybody's taking games off everybody right now. The Heat lost to the Wizards today. Like, you're seeing everything from that standpoint. But I think you make a great point, and the way to summarize it all is they're learning each other. They're learning what they need to be on a night-in and night-out basis. They're problem-solving along the way, which, again, I don't know if you get 100% completion by the end of this season, but the closer and closer you get to that, the more things you go through, the more blown leads you have that you still find a way to close, the more and more that you have, the more on time on task you have, the better. I get the point about, hey, they're not playing tough competition right now. I mean, it's about to change, especially the back half of March. It's about to change. But think about in previous seasons and even earlier this season, even versus the not so good competition, the Pels would find ways to lose. And now they're blowing these teams out by 15, by 20, by 30 points and things like that. You're finding how to operate and what you need to do night in, night out, non-negotiable, like you mentioned. So that brings up the final questions. What's left to solve? Because there's still some things, like, again, there's no athletic center coming out of the street clothes to come save the Pelicans this season. So, like, that's a wash. But what are some of the things that you still feel a little uncertain about as the Pelicans round out these last 18 games?
Well, one of the things that again, this when a team is winning like this, it feels like nitpicking, and, you know, you want to make sure that you're fine-tuning all of the little things. I think, obviously, you know, you want to maintain a certain level of intensity throughout the entirety of the game. Listen, you're not going to have a lot of – it's weird because the Pelicans feel like a team that, like, you don't like them and you don't – you feel bad when they blow – you're worried about them when they blow out a team in the first part, but you also don't really want a close game at the end yet. So it's like you give us, like, a 10-point game, like, all the way throughout the game, the Pelicans lead by, like, 10, and you're like, okay, I think that's, like, the sweet spot. It's like the little bit, the porridge, right? You don't like the blowout. You don't like the close game. Let me get that right in the middle competitive game, and the Pelicans will go undefeated in those. But I think just keeping the intensity up, you know, when you get to these high, you know, these blown lead, big leads and not blow them, because in the playoffs, you're not going to have blown leads, but – I mean, you're not going to have big leads, you know, big blowouts in the playoffs, but you will have opportunities to be up by like 10. And then, like, you don't want to have the habit of, like, oh, coming out in second halves and not, you know, competing at the level that got you to where you are and the level that's, you know, that's necessary to win a playoff game. And then another thing, again, this is nitpicking. Probably this is more of an opinion than a fact at this point in time. Listen, Jose and Najee have been fantastic. They have been great. And some of these blowout games, if you continue to have some of them, I just want to see what Matt Ryan and Jordan Hawkins look like on the floor with B.I. and with Zion. The lineups, and they have been great against these teams in this run with, like, Jose and Najee and Zion and Larry Nance. It feels like some of the better teams with, like, starting NBA defenses and better players will find a way to mitigate some of that, the way that like Najee's been getting wide open threes and Jose's been getting wide open threes. And I don't think those guys are as great of shooters as we've seen these last couple games. Now, they are good shooters. Najee has made tremendous strides this season. We talked about him earlier. But I think that there's going to be a time where you're going to need to space the floor against a playoff-level defense for Zion, for Brandon Ingram. And I just don't want – now, Jordan Hawkins might not have that same issue as like Jackson and Kyra did during that play-in tournament game, where like you just kind of threw them out there because you needed them and they weren't ready, right? And I get that Matt Ryan is like a undrafted two-way guy, whatever the case is, but he has a skill set that works hand in glove with Zion. Zion talks about, they asked him about his high assist games. He talks about, I find my shooters and I hit them. Find my shooters. Shooters. I just want to see it in some of these games. These DNP CDs for Hawk and Larry Dance, even in like blowouts where like Hawk comes in for like the last 3 minutes or so, like just give him some burn, because I do think when the playoffs come, you're going to need some floor spacing at some point in time. And you just don't want to have those guys run out there and be like, okay, well, look, I know we didn't need you all regular season. Go space the floor for those, you know, those guys now. And those shooters, again, Jordan Hawkins has the confidence of Deion Sanders. So it may not matter to him. And Matt Ryan is like a shooting machine, literally like a drill, like he just catches and shoots. But you still want to have those guys with a worked up, you know, with the sweat going as you throw them into a game that you might need them in.
Yeah, I look at the same thing again. You just can see it. Like, there are certain shots that land, you know, with a Jose or a Najee. With credit to Najee, the last couple of threes, he's been splashing them. There's certain shots that land.
Talk about it now. Yeah.
That land that you're like, man, if that was Hawk, or man, if that was Matt Ryan and Nelson. I get it. Like, if you're not hitting the threes, do they give you more on the defensive end? Can they create extra possessions? Sure. I get on that end. And again, if you got Zion and B.I., you probably don't – and Trey playing this way, you probably don't need a whole lot of threes from that perspective, because a lot of it is defense to offense. But I agree with you. I think there's going to be games when you need those guys available. And, again, it's easy for everyone to, you know, yell at Willie and be so disappointed, but at the same time say – well, this team is breaking franchise records and scoring things that they've never done before, and top 10 in defense. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, either it can't all be talent. As we've seen so far, coaching matters. It can't all be talent. So you got to give credit where it's credit due. But I do think there's going to be times that, like I started this podcast off, tough decisions are going to have to be made, and are you willing to make them? The other thing that I'm a little curious about is like the lineups when there's no Larry Nance or JV, because like I said, there's no athletic center marching through those doors. And so can you maximize the lineups when you put your five best guys on the court at all time with the Trey and Zion and B.I. and Herb and CJ or Dyson when he comes back and play the all wing stop lineup? Like, can you maximize those minutes? Because Dyson's also, I think, one of the best rebounders on the team too. So can you find what that looks like, because they went to a little bit in Philly and it was a disaster. What does that look like? And my last thing is, like, there's just way too many opportunities where I feel like B.I. and Zion could be in sets together and could create opportunities for each other that, like, you don't see. Like, you saw it at the end of the Philly game. B.I. sets the screen for Zion. They don't know what to do, so B.I. ends up screening two people and Zion puts the go-ahead bucket. Like, there's going to be more. Maybe you're saving some of those looks for the playoff, but you'd like to see more of it in the regular season as you kind of wind down. But to your point, they're playing really good basketball that's transferable. The way they play defense, move the ball, and paint the great. And that's, every time you see that, generally the Pelicans have a good result. So the next couple games are not the last couple games. So you've got Cleveland at home, finally get to play back in the Smoothie King City, another two-day break, and then you get a back-to-back Clippers and Trailblazers. That this week is going to kind of be huge for multiple reasons, not only to keep that comfortable spot in five, but can you make a push? Can you see what's up with the Clippers and see if you can dabble in that four range? But what you got left for people, what are you looking at as this week kind of forms and takes shape?
As always, you never know what people are going through, so give someone a smile today. Yeah, this next week is the week, right? This is the week where you get Cleveland and you get that Clippers game. You know, you get that back-to-back with Portland. But those two games in particular, you've put on a show. You've put the national media is on notice. People are talking about, oh, that Pelican New Orleans team. You know that? The New Orleans, what they call it? The New Orleans Pelican. No S. Oh, New Orleans Pelican. Yeah, well, okay. you've put the team on the national media on notice. Like, now here come some of the better teams, right? And this is a good warm-up. Because towards the end of March, you gonna have a time, and so you get these better teams coming in. You know, go out there, play some of the same fundamental basketball that you play. Move the ball, get the ball to the paint, find your mismatches, play through them, and play defense. Let defense be the non-negotiable. That Clippers game looms large, because if you can win this Cleveland game and go into that Clippers game, you got a chance to. You know, with Kawhi and Paul George sitting and Russ is out, you got a chance to do some things. And if you opening up against the Clippers, I still think the Pelicans and the Clippers, I don't really know if that series home court is going to matter a lot, because both of those teams have won in both locations. But I do think you've come off as a different team. You get a different sense of confidence when you're the one opening up the playoff round. And so I think if you can get to that point, you know, the Pelicans can make some noise and ruin some parties in this playoff. So as always, follow myself at Garrick_Rattler, follow my brother at Raphael_Rattler, follow the page at NO Basketball, no E. Most importantly, subscribe to New Orleans.basketball.